Pygmy is sitting in the lobby of this hotel, and he sees me come sailing through one afternoon. Hey, hey, aren't you the girl who made the picture with us? With me and Ralph Cooper? Oh, yes, I remember you. I'm looking for a straight woman. Do you think you could do comedy? Sure I could do comedy. So I then am hired for a week. Well, for a week I step on every punchline he's got. But he's tolerant. He says, I'm going to make a straight woman out of her or else. So that began an association with him, the Boggy Ponds comedian, that lasted for 15 years.
Oh, really?
I left there and I went to the Apollo with him. And I worked for Frank Shipman in the Apollo Theater for 10 years until I left the theater. As a matter of fact, I made a profession out of being a straight woman. That paid the rent while I looked for the legitimate show, or while I read for the Schuberts, or whatever.
When did you realize that you had now committed yourself to being an actress?
I don't think I ever realized it till I left it. It was something that this came about automatically, and my life fell into a pattern, and then I began actively working at it and seeking employment in that field without saying, well, this is what I am.
Was there any stigma connected to it as far as your
My father, up until the day that he closed his eyes, refused to see me on the stage because a woman on the stage was a fallen woman, and that could not possibly be his daughter. Someone else's, yes, but not his. I have known my father to come to New York. He would come every 2 years because he would go to Detroit. He'd fly to Detroit. He'd pick up a brand new car off of the assembly line at the Chrysler factory. He would drive to New York City. He would stay with me. Then he'd drive back across the country. And he had it figured out where he was getting his trip free with what he saved by picking his car up at the factory. His eye on the buck. I had been appearing, Frank Shipman, who owned the Apollo, was known as a very tough guy to work for. Well, immediately I met the gentleman, who was Jew. We had a great rapport, and he doubled the salary I was asking, and the salary I was asking was double what had ever been paid to a straight woman. So now here I am making $500 a week as a straight woman, and he's using me also to introduce the acts in his reviews. Which brings me to introduce such people as Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Jimmy Lunsford, all of the grand stars of the 40s.
$500 a week? That's not bad today.
Yeah, well, I had a nice apartment.
I guess so.
I was getting rid of Timmy Rogers, husband number two. And I was making it in New York in grand style. And then suddenly my life stopped being lonely because the nicer group of women in New York discovered, well, she makes a nice living, she lives nice, and she's a nice girl. And they started inviting me to play bridge or whatever. Instead of playing bridge, through those years there was a lot of nightclubbing that went on. And women in New York have always enjoyed a greater freedom than they do anywhere else in the country. It is possible for two women to go to a gin mill and sit at a bar and have a cocktail, and if a man tries to intrude, the manager will shush him off. So you had this measure of freedom. And I enjoyed New York. I was shopping on Fifth Avenue. The works, you know, the dream had come true. Except for my dad. Then I only had to worry about that 1 month out of the year.
Do you think, retrospectively, that it's possible that you drawn to it because it was sort of forbidden fruit as a sort of rebellion against the era?
I don't think so. I think that circumstances just fell into place.
Was there such a thing as the casting couch in Hollywood or on Broadway or the Apollo?
No, not at the Apollo. As I say, I began with a grand rapport with the owner of the building. The casting couch existed in Hollywood if you were dumb enough or unmoral enough to have gone for such a thing. But to have someone, a white man, even touch your arm immediately there was a certain attitude you assumed that put him back in his place, so that he understood that you were a very special person. You were aware that some of the lesser members of the caste were kind of common, and that things were said to them that were untoward, and that there were attitudes that lacked respect. It couldn't happen with me because I was born to be a star.
Did you meet, what's her name, Nina McKinney?
Yes. I did not meet her for many, many years after I had been in New York. I did not meet her until the Sidney Poitier period. All during the years that I worked at the Apollo, I always heard the terrible stories about Nina May, about her being, is it possible to repeat the stories?
Sure.
About her being on the set making Saunders of the River in Hollywood, and how some of the stagehands had moved a piece of scenery and found her behind the scenery in an obscene act with one of the other stagehands, and that's why she hadn't made it in Hollywood. And as to support this, at the time that I met her, she was a common streetwalker on 116th Street.
I noticed that in most of the films of that period, the love interests tended to be very light-skinned. Was there a definite disadvantage? Was there a typecasting based on complexion in either Hollywood or on the stage?
In Hollywood, yes, because the Jew looked upon the light-skinned white woman as a black woman as a very special article, that she was the hothouse variety.
The Lena Horne type. Was that a preference of the producers or a preference of the black males who went to see the movies?
That was the producer, because we didn't know about the black males. I was always so ashamed after I made these pictures, because I figured I was so bad, and really I was, that I would go see the rushes while we were in progress. But I would never go see the finished product, because I made the one mistake of going to see this zombie picture that I'd made with Mandan. And there had been a really funny line, but I didn't understand comedy enough to know about a double take or to understand how to deliver the line, and I had muffed it. And we had gone to San Bernardino to the sneak preview of this picture, and I was so ashamed I wanted to slip underneath the seat. And of course, when the performance was over and we were in the lobby and everybody was rushing over to Mantan and getting his autograph, and they were bypassing me like they'd never seen me. So that taught me, well, don't ever go see your pictures. They ain't too good there.
Did you tour outside of New York?
Oh, heavens, yes. One does not make their living by staying in New York. Only Lunt and Fontaine are home for Christmas dinner. Everybody else is hitting it on the road somewhere. I have worked the Chitlin' Circuit. I have done it from the Palace Theater on Broadway to the Royal in Baltimore, which is Chitlin' Circuit.
You're the Howard in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yes. I kept playing the Howard until one night I played the Howard, and summer had come suddenly, as it does, you know, in Washington. Suddenly one day it's 100 degrees, and the stagehands had neglected to get in touch with the fire department. You know that big steeple on the Howard Theater? Bats live up there. And when this heat hit, those bats were getting out of that heat. And they were zooming across the stage and out over the audience toward the beam of light. Howard Theater in Washington, which rises very high. And the summer descended with a bang in Washington, as it does. The temperature rose to possibly over 100. And that steeple is populated by many, many bats. And those bats were busy getting out of that heat. And Sidney and I are performing on the stage in this highly emotional, high-impact drama detective story. And I'm emoting all over the place, crying. And just past my nose swoops a big bat, sails across the audience, up into the balcony, toward the projection room lights, and comes swooping back and lands on the desk right in front of me. And my voice disappeared into my chest and never came back out. Which is the only time in my life I ever blew up.
You ever what?
Blew up on the stage.
Oh. Did the audience find that funny or just
Oh, people were scrambling out of that theater. Everybody knew that bats carried the rabies.
Oh. What kind of, the Chitlin' Circuit didn't take you into the Deep South, or did it?
There was a route that took you into the Deep South, but I was with a famous enough trio, Pygmeet Markham, Sybil Lewis, and company, which included a straight man, or two, that we didn't have to pursue that because we were in demand in New York enough to stay within the province of playing the Apollo, the Palace, the Apollo, the Royal in Baltimore, the Howard in Washington, the Gotham in Detroit, the Regal in Chicago, back to the Apollo.
Did black actors generally try to avoid the South because they're...
Yes, indeed. There was one very...
Was it physical danger, or was it just that the money wasn't very good?
Your contracts were signed in the North so that your money would have been the same. But who wanted to undergo the privations of the South if it could be avoided? But there was one very special thing that used to happen. There was a set of landladies along the theatrical route who had grand mansions that were staffed by good people with fine cooks and beautifully furnished mansions who took in actors. Now, Pygmeet could never stay at any of these places because he was just a dirty old man. But I could stay at them. And if we were traveling with a straight man of any consequence, he could stay at them. There was Edwina Swope in Washington. In Baltimore, there was a couple, Harrison Owens and his wife. And in Richmond, there was a woman named... In Richmond, there was a very fine one, too. In Richmond, you were based in her house, and you played the Quad Cities. You played Richmond, you played a big hall in Norfolk, which wasn't really a theater, but it had a stage, it was a big hall. And you played Hampton, Virginia. I've also played the Institute at Hampton. And you played another city, and always at night you'd come back to Richmond.
Was it a hard life, or was the excitement and the money worth it in the project?
Well, I could cushion it for myself because I was making a good dollar. And of course, on the road, I was getting my expenses also. So that's another $150 a week. So I could go into the best accommodation and afford the best for myself. If it was a place that did not have a cook that served every day, then I could eat in whatever the best restaurant available was. Except in Baltimore. In Baltimore, there is no best restaurant. There was a woman in the alley back behind the Royal Theater who cooked for the musicians. And you know, musicians will eat mud. And this woman not only was unclean, but she was a sickly person, and therefore not interested in cooking, and it was just atrocious. She used to make okra soup. Just ghastly. So I'd always lose weight in Baltimore. Now, if the star of the bill, who might be Ella Fitzgerald or someone who had a chauffeur and car, then we'd go back to Washington at night to eat. And hit the Cimarron Club. Of course, you could never go in and out of Washington without hitting the Cimarron. That was an after-hour place that was housed in a very attractive mansion. It was run by a man named Von Blaine.
What is an after-hours place?
After the bar is closed, then you go to the after-hour place and continue your drinking.
Was the general attitude in the black community toward theater people that they were some kind of way a branch of low life?
No.
or were they respected as real artists?
As artists, or at least as big money makers.
So your father's attitude was sort of peculiar.
My father's attitude was Victorian.
What about your friends when you ran into them from time to time now that you were, your name was in lights?
My friends were in awe of me, and I was only in contact with my very closest friends because my father was proud when I would come back to San Francisco, and he would see to it that I appeared, my picture appeared on the local newspaper front and things like that, but never in conjunction with the fact that I was making it as an artist, because that was just not in keeping with his idea of what a prominent family's daughter should do. And he wasn't going to accept that thing any kind of way you presented it.
What did your brother think?
My brother became a musician. So that's what he thought. He said, she got something good going there. And I'm going to do it too. So he took bass lessons and became a bassist.
This is before he went to Transbay Federal?
Yes. And during the time he first began at Transbay, at night he used to play the bass with Slam Stewart. My mother was overwhelmed because her daughter, the actress, was in residence at 1330 Baker. And I would always tell my mother, don't say actress, that's not the way to present what I do. The field is acting, I am known as an actor. When you say actress already, it begins to mean something else, like some kind of a dizzy-brained idiot who possibly was morally unkept. My mother never got that thing. She considered me in the same league with Joan Crawford and always told me I was not being paid enough.
She's probably right.
Well, I had now reached a point where in Hollywood I was making $1,000 a day, which is good money today.
But the limit was the fact that I guess that there were a few scripts being written for black people.
That's it. You see, Walter White, who was then head of the NAACP, had issued a decree that no black actor or woman was to play the role of a prostitute or anything that would be disparaging to the race, except for Hattie McDaniels and Butterfly McQueen. Miss Scarlett, I don't know nothing about birthing no baby. I could have killed that broad.
That was one of the funniest lines. Despite the fact that it reinforced the stereotype.
So what had happened then was that Lena had turned down a couple of very promising roles, like the role that Jean Crane had in Pinky. Had originally been offered to Lena Horne. But because of what Walter White had said, she felt it would be against her best interests to accept the role. Well, now, if Lena Horne was being careful about what she was selecting, you knew I was going to be careful.
What was wrong, other than some of the assumptions behind the whole tragic mulatto, what was wrong with that role? She was a respected nurse.
She was sleeping with a white man. She was not married. Don't you remember she had a line where she said, you are using me, when she turned away from him? And she said that you like to see me after dark, but not in the daylight. So, meanwhile, while Walter White is making this decree and we're busy turning down good money-making roles on the West Coast, Jane White is playing in Forbidden Fruit. She's previewing it in Boston. Forbidden Fruit is a story of a black-white relationship, and Jane is the black girl.
I didn't even know his wife was an actress.
No, this is his daughter.
Oh.
So that's how much he meant that thing. He meant that thing for the rest of us, but not for his own.
So people took it seriously enough? They were conscious of what kind of image they were projecting? Because they don't
Indeed.
Seem to be today.
I'm aware today that they are taking a step backwards.
Several steps, they're running backwards.
My husband says that I'm hypersensitive about it, but this is exactly what I have fought for during my lifetime. For the role that does not necessarily have to be a black role.
what would you say was the pinnacle of your career? What would you, at what point did you say?
Well, I would have to say when I did Detective Story on the stage, because we always take the stage as a criteria, with Sidney Poitier. And the reason I say that is because by that time I was a polished performer. Also, there was not a cattle call. They just telephoned me and asked me to come, that they had a play and they wanted me to come and read for it, and they wanted me for the role. Other than that, unfortunately, actors are put in a position where several people are reading against each other, and the management then selects who they want out of the group. But I didn't have to read in competition, so they knew about me.
Would you say the general, that the actors are among the more exploited book workers?
By all means. This is possibly the only country on the planet that doesn't have a national theater. So where do you train an actor? A plumber gets trained, a carpenter gets trained, why not the artist?
Did you meet Dorothy Dandridge?
Yes.
What did you think of her?
Well, here again, this is Entre Nous, and you cannot publish this. Dorothy Dandridge was a retarded child. And so was Harold Nicholas, which is why they produced Haroline, who is a dreadfully retarded child. Dorothy was a member of that family, all them Dandridges, that Hattie Dandridge and Sam Dandridge, Vivian Dandridge, and there's some more Dandridges. And when she was given a script, they'd sit up all night with her and teach it to her line by line until she knew it by rote. Now, if she went on the set the next day and they changed the line, she was in trouble.
Well, she certainly pulled it off in Carmen Jones.
She pulled it off in many ways, Island in the Sun. But that's all them Dandridges fighting for and pulling together as a unit. Then, of course, she had the early New York background from the Cotton Club, which gave her some prestige.
What was the... So what carried her extraordinary good looks?
And that Dandridge family. You got to put them in there, because they were in there slugging every inch of the way.
Under what circumstances did you meet Sidney Poitier?
I met Sidney, I don't remember when I met him. It just seems like I've always known him. I suppose I met Sidney when he was in Anna Lucasta, because I had friends in the cast, and I had been invited to understudy the Hilda Sims role and the role of Blanche. But I could make more money doing what I was doing, so I did not take that opportunity. And Hilda had gotten all of the good that was to come from the role anyway. She had all the publicity, she opened the show, and she was the star. Hilda also had a terrific alcohol problem. They had a trained nurse with her. But it's my understanding that she never missed a performance, bombed or not.
Do you think that actors make good friends with other actors, or is it very much of a dog-eat-dog kind of world?
In some instances, you will form a personal friendship. In others, there are people that you must climb on in order to get for yourself.
Who do you consider what was Sidney doing at the time that you met him? How did he...
In Anna Lucasta. Sidney, now, you tell me how he was selected for the role he was. Sidney had a walk-on with no lines. That's what in the theater is called a spear carrier. He was dressed in a sailor suit, and he was to come into the set where this prostitute was sitting at the bar, put a nickel in the jukebox and start a record going, and then start dancing to the record, and then disappear out of the door into the night, which gave this prostitute, Blanche, sitting at the bar, the opportunity to discuss another prostitute with a brilliant line that brought down the second curtain. The line was, "That whore could hear a quarter drop two blocks away." Bam, came down the second curtain, which was the importance of the role of Blanche. Now, Sidney walked in and walked out like a spirit. Yet he was the one that somebody way down the line, in order to eat and to take care of his wife, Sidney had opened a rib joint on 7th Avenue. And as actors, we would all go there after. Those of us who were working, I was always working. So I could always buy dinner for somebody else because I had eaten fancy that night. But I would go by there in order to laud it over the unworking, unwashed. And to show the girls what you could do if you were working with a new ring I might have or something that was expensive. And that's how I got to be a friend of Sidney's. Now, Sidney did not ask for me, because I don't think he respected what I was doing as a straight woman. The fact that I was making money at it, you know, actors who are unemployed look down on those who are making money. Yeah, but look at what she's doing. But what I was doing was getting exposure week after week after week, because I would play the Apollo Theater 40 weeks out of 52. So that's a lot of money you're racking up per year. Also, that gives me some time to search for the newly written play or to read for a particular part that is coming up. So it was the ideal circumstance for me. I can maintain myself and my dog in style.
Was the dog's name Camp?
No, this one was named Flash.
What kind of dog was he?
He was a boxer. And he had to work too. Everybody in my household worked. After Lawrence, there was no unworking. My dog had fine papers. So I would put him at stud in a kennel that was run by very fashionable Chinese vet named Denny Tong. And Denny had clientele from all over New York City. My dog was particularly fine because he was completely fawn colored except for a white blaze on his chest. Well, this was what was desirable, to get rid of the brindle out of the coloring in the boxer. So he was desirable as a stud with a fawn bitch in order to throw a litter that would be all fawn. You follow? Okay. So every time my dog was tied, as it is called, I would receive $75 and a pick of the litter. Well, if I couldn't get the $75, if there was an area where he wasn't busy, and he stayed pretty busy, then I would go find somebody who maybe had a dog who didn't have good papers but had a good-looking animal. And I would take two. I'd take the whole litter to the vet to have him select the two best. And I would take them ostensibly on the pretense of getting their tails clipped, which has to be done the first 10 days before their nerves develop. So now while he's clipping, he's examining each animal for conformation, for structure, and clarity of eye, and all the rest of it, for coat coloring. So I get the two best. Well, now I'm willing. This I did in a two-bedroom apartment. I tore up the wall-to-wall carpeting, moved all the furnishings out of one bedroom, and I went and got a child's playpen, you know, that has that false wooden bottom, and filled that up with strips of paper. I took two puppies and put them in this playpen, and I ran chicken wire around it so they couldn't, you know, squeeze between the lathes and get out. And every morning, you know, your landlord would have dispossessed you had he known. So I would have to wash down this, I put down a linoleum rug, I'd have to wash down with Lysol every night. Then I would, in the morning, I'd take a laundry basket, put the puppies down at the bottom on paper, put some laundry over the top, and long before anybody else was up, I had them out in the park getting their exercise and doing whatever little things they had to do. And the vet would tell me exactly how to feed the animals, when to give them their shots. Well, he was carrying them through and I was just doing the work. So they got their pablum, they got their cream, they got their percomorphum, they got their fresh ground beef, everything that would make a fine animal. So that by the time they had had their ears clipped at 3 months, this is a really beautiful dog. Then they still don't have AKC papers. There's no way of faking that I have found. But I could always go to a Negro doctor who had money and wanted to show off and trot this brace of animals passed, and he would buy them. And I could get myself $600 for the two dogs. But meanwhile, I possibly spent $400 to bring them that far. But that was a sideline for making money. Because, of course, you must make money. Everything you do.
You said that you sold cosmetics at some point.
Oh, this was after I had left the theater. While I was doing Detective Story with Sidney, after Sidney and I went from the Apollo Theater to the Royal Theater in Baltimore to the Howard in Washington, and we were to go to Virginia. But when we left New York City, the papers had not been signed for the company to go to Virginia. That was to be done while we were in Washington. Well, when the incident happened with the bats, the show closed as of right then.
And was that then what happened? Was that the end of your career?
No. No, we came on back to New York. So now I have really had such a success with this role because I was a favorite at that point in the Apollo Theater. So possibly anything I had done would have come off well. But Variety, which is a trade paper, had given me such really spectacular coverage that I didn't want to go back to being a straight woman with a baggy pants comedian. So I started reading for what I had disdained in the past, and that was equity minimum companies. That's taking a legitimate show on the road, but at minimum salary. So now I'm going to become the artiste. I went out with a show called Harvey. The star of whom was, play it again, Sam, Dooley Wilson. And we were out there on equity minimum. But I had managed to get billing opposite him.